Overcrowding issues at University Hospital Limerick are back in the spotlight again after tragic details emerged from a HSE report into the death of a patient in 2019. Listeners got in touch with News Talk yesterday to share more devastating accounts of how the overcrowding has affected their loved ones at the hospital. Well, today, our reporter Josh Crosby went to Limerick to meet with those working there and those who are being admitted. He's on the line now. Good evening, Josh. What state is the hospital in today?
Well, Anton, it'll come as no surprise to anyone who keeps an eye on the INMO's daily trolley watch figures that University Hospital Limerick has topped the list again today. Every morning at 8 a.m, nurses will do a count, and today there are unfortunately 92 patients on trolleys here in Limerick, making it the highest count in the country, with Cork University Hospital the second worst affected with 78 trolleys. But as we know, Anton, behind every one of those figures is someone in need of care and attention, and when you have overcrowding like this, it's inevitable it will eat into those resources, with staff being pulled left, right and centre. I've seen it myself in hospital. Nurses will be doing one job and they'll be called on for help with several more jobs. So that can only impact the efficiency of the tasks being performed at the time. Now, it's nothing new that UHL is facing overcrowding issues, but when internal reviews are linking overcrowding as a factor to the death of a man, and with Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly visiting the hospital tomorrow, the pressure is on now for some new measures to be taken here. I met with people who are bringing patients in today and those who are in for appointments themselves, and you can really hear the contrasting experiences between A&E and scheduled appointments. Firstly, we'll hear from Larry, who travelled from Nenagh in County Tipperary with his uncle. Larry says the waiting times are not only physically damaging, but also affect patients' emotions.
Today we're back in again for physio. My 88-year-old uncle dislocated his shoulder Paddy's weekend. We were in the A&E here for 31 hours. He's 88. We sat in a chair for about 14 hours and put back in his shoulder at 5:30 a.m. in the morning, and we went home the next day.
88 years of age. When did he arrive?
The 16th, the Friday of Paddy's weekend. Ash was very distressing.
It'd be distressing for someone in their good health, in a young age.
Yeah, and you can imagine at 88 and the pain of a dislocated shoulder. Now, in fairness to staff, we're brilliant.
I know.
Cannot blame the staff one bit. It seems to be there's just no organisation. That seems to be the big problem in the A&E. There's not enough staff. The staff that are there are just working flat out.
Being called from every angle.
We had people talking to us trying to sort out the problem and being called away to a bigger problem. The service here is super. The biggest problem is access in the service is the problem, you know. And for us coming, like, we're an hour from here, you know, and I brought that man in on the Friday evening in bad pain with a dislocated shoulder, and we had to pass a hospital to get to here. You know, it's just a pain in the butt.
You just have to come out from being in for an appointment?
Just now, yeah. And my appointment was a vascular imaging, and my appointment was exactly at 11:30. It's now I'm out, and I'm going to the car at 10 to 12.
20 minutes in and out?
In and out. I can't say enough for this hospital. It's absolutely brilliant. And with the staff being down on it and everything, like, you know, I think they're great people.
It was just very hard on older people. There was no dignity or anything left. You know, there's no privacy. They were in trolleys, they were in chairs, they were being treated. And it was just crazy.
When you're saying there's a bit of privacy on a corridor with some kind of a makeshift thing around you.
There's nothing around you. And you hear everyone's conversation with the doctors. I know A&E was horrendous.
And your own father, now, when he went in, was he on a trolley? I know you said you went in.
He's on a trolley. He was on a trolley until he got to bed that night. No, he was on a trolley, yeah.
He was.
He's 89 this year.
It shouldn't be that we have to say at least he got it sorted in the one night. At least he got a bed on the one night.
Oh, God, he was awful lucky. I thought he'd be on the trolley until today. Yeah. You know, he was just awful lucky that someone passed away. That's the way it was.
It's a sad state of affairs.
That's the way they told me. Someone passed away and he got the next bed.
People there talking about patients' experience in University Hospital Limerick and very critical of the system. A lot of praise for those providing the care, though. Did you get to meet with any of the nurses and staff, Josh?
I did, Anton. And look, it does have to be said, everyone's experience here can be different. I met one man who didn't want to be recorded, who said he was on a trolley from last Tuesday until the Friday when he checked himself out of here. Then I met people who were in and out in an hour, like that man, 20-minute turnaround. But it's the emergency department that gets the hit. I had a look into the A&E today. There were around 20 people. There was plenty of space for those still presenting. But then, as we know from the trolley watch, other areas of the hospital are being put under added pressure. Now, I contacted hospital management about the concerns being raised, and I was told that they do accept that persistent overcrowding in the ED compromises patient dignity, and this is not the kind of care they wish to provide. But the statement went on to say that during the first quarter of this year, there have been 21,298 presentations to the emergency department, representing a 14% increase on the same period last year. But I met with Mary Fogarty, who's an assistant director of industrial relations with the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organization. Mary's been working as a union official in the Midwest for over 20 years, so she's a very good understanding of how changes have impacted services. I started asking Mary how 92 people on trolleys today affects the efforts on the ground.
I suppose what that brings to the hospital is a level of overcrowding that's unsafe for patients. We witness daily in the hospital our members complaining of the fact that there are very elderly patients on trolleys, quite unwell, quite sick, that they cannot provide safe care. We have crowded conditions whereby it is impossible to even walk down the corridors of the emergency department. We have situations where access to patients to administer medication or to provide basic clinical care and basic hygiene care is very compromised. We have patients' personal histories and medical histories being discussed on corridors. It actually is a shocking state that we still have this situation prevailing in Limerick. And our members in the hospital, nurses there, are deeply sad that the situation is continuing as it is, and that despite the fact that for the last number of years they have persistently and consistently raised the risks that are there.
When the frustration boils over for the patients and their loved ones, what are staff faced with then on the ground?
Yeah, unfortunately the situation does lead to patients and their family members understandably becoming very frustrated, but when they're waiting long periods of time, it is to the nurse that they will take out a significant level of frustration on.
So not a safe working environment for your members, and then in turn leading to an unsafe service in itself.
Completely unsafe. Our members have said that for many years now. The situation in Limerick is unsafe for patients and it's unsafe for staff because they can't work, they can't deliver care in that type of a scenario. It's constantly chaotic. Recently I visited the emergency department myself and throughout the hospital, and I can confidently say that the emergency department was literally like a war zone.
So what's your message to the Department of Health ahead of the Minister's visit?
We need more beds here rapidly. We need to see greater improvements in University Hospital Limerick in the flow of patients into and out of that hospital.
That's Mary Fogarty from the INMO. Now, Josh, you mentioned that ministerial visit, Minister Donnelly due in the hospital tomorrow. What's the political reaction to all of this?
Yes, the Minister, along with the CEO of the HSE, Bernard Gloucester, are expected to arrive here tomorrow. Now, locally, there's been a motion passed by Limerick City and County Council for funding of €91 million for UHL and for a dedicated task force to be set up to address the issues. Here today in Limerick, we had Sinn Féin's Mary Lou MacDonald meeting with unions representing healthcare workers. I met with Deputy MacDonald after she came out of that meeting to see what she and her party would do to solve these ongoing issues if they were in government.
We've just met with representatives of the staff from UHL to discuss the ongoing crisis there and the lack of any fulsome government response to it. And the reality is that so long as we have the current government in place, so long as for those who insist that Simon Harris must be the next, the third Taoiseach in 4 years, for those who will not go back to the people and allow them have their say, let me just be clear, we will have these crises and they will get worse for so long as we have this current government. We need a general election, and it's a matter of urgency now because the issues are so big and affecting people in such profound ways that the government may wish to simply stagger on, but we can't sit by and allow society to simply stagger on with all of this.
The budget never seems to be enough for health. So if your party was to become into government, where would you source it, or what would you do? What would be the solution here locally?
Well, in the recent budget, the ministers got to their feet and they underfunded health. They consciously underfunded health. And that's not my assertion. That was the assertion of the head of the HSE. They always knew that the system was going to run into trouble. And now we have UHL. They are short of 200 nursing posts for the funded beds, 200 posts. There is an embargo. There has been a failure to recruit at the level that is required. They've talked about additional beds, the new unit of whatever, 96 beds. It won't be 96 new beds, but in any event, that process is far too slow. We need the old Nightingale ward also refurbished for use. There are things that can be done, but the first thing that needs to happen is the government and the system, Stephen Donnelly and all of the government, need to accept that more beds are required and more staff are required. The hospital is understaffed. Equally, the healthcare assistants, the hygiene workers, cleaners, catering, you're short about 70 posts there. And I think it's most unfair. In fact, I think it's quite scandalous that staff are expected to work under that level of pressure in those conditions by a government that knows that they're short-staffed and that they're being shortchanged. And the awful, awful tragedy of this is in cases like the late Martin Abbott, whose story I read over the weekend. I'm sure all of us send our sympathy to his family. No family should live that nightmare. Nobody. It is absolutely unconscionable.
But how do you fund it? Like, how do you source the budget for it when there's always billions, millions thrown at it?
You see, let me tell you, whoever is in government, the healthcare system has to be funded. And it is a substantial budget, but it's a question of applying it efficiently and applying it equitably. So I would say to you that while the public system isn't properly resourced, the state opts for private provision, for outsourcing, for agency, all of which are hugely expensive. So actually, understaffing and under-resourcing your public, the main pillar of your healthcare system, proves costly in the end. So everything that I am saying to you, more staff, more beds, all of these things are not just necessary so that people get the care that they require in a safe and timely way. It's also the cost-effective way.
That's Marilyn McDonald, the Sinn Féin leader, speaking to our reporter, Josh Crosby. Now, Josh, there are plans for the hospital itself. What's the latest on the expansion?
Yeah, so it has to be said, Anton, the construction workers are flat out here today for a 96-bed block, which is expected to be ready around the first quarter of next year. But the thing with this is that it's not going to be 96 fully additional beds coming on stream. So I was told by management today that the plan was for 48 new beds and 48 beds that would be replacing old stock. But now there are talks that the figure of the new beds might slightly rise again, but we have no confirmation on that. Now, I mentioned earlier that the Minister for Health will be visiting tomorrow. Well, there's a protest planned for that event by the Midwest Hospital Campaign. It's also planning a larger protest on the 13th of April, which the group is calling a Drive to Save Lives convoy protest, and that's travelling across the whole Midwest region. I met with Mary Callan, who's the Limerick spokesperson for the group. She says there needs to be more resources put into the smaller hospitals.
The only solution to the overcrowding in UHL is a reopening of the A&Es that were closed on us in 2009.
There have been protests over the years. Like, have they been listened to? Have they achieved anything through their campaigning and their appeals?
Well, I think I saw today now that there was an acknowledgement that there is a need for another A&E in the region, you know. But that's just an acknowledgement, you know. They keep saying we're opening new 96-bed unit. When they talk about 96 beds, they don't take into account the amount of wards that are going to be closed in the main hospital. That's not going to alleviate the issue of overcrowding. We're the only region in the country, you know, that doesn't have a Model 3 hospital, which is astonishing.
And when you're going around meeting people who you're representing and your neighbours, your friends, like, where are they at now when they do need to seek healthcare? Like, do they try to go somewhere else? Are they trying to save to go private, or what do they do?
Well, to be honest with you, there's an awful lot of people who actually don't want to go to the hospital. There's a big elderly population there in Gary Owen. If you walk around those doors, you will find a lot of those people would do anything other than to go out to UHL. And so when we talk about there's deaths occurring because of the overcrowding in UHL, there's also deaths occurring because people simply won't go to the hospital and just let it go. If I broke my arm in the morning, I lived in Belfast for many years, I would literally travel to go to the Royal Victoria Hospital to get my arm fixed because I would be waiting out there for many, many, many days and hours, you know.
If they were to give you a blank cheque, what's the solution?
The solution is a Model 3 hospital in the area. That is the only solution.
Well, there you go. That is Mary Cahillan from the Midwest Hospital Campaign with a fairly jaundiced view of that planned expansion, speaking to our own reporter, Josh Crosby.